There is name that I'm going to watch it. For me, including our flag, bring it again.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good evening, everyone. Can you have roll call, please?
Roll call, Director Mezquia.
Present.
Director Bilodeau.
Present.
Director Green.
Here.
Director Meeks.
Here.
Director Nguyen. Director Sheldon. Director Sheldon.
I'm sorry, yes, here, thank you. Thank
Thank
you.
you. Director Tran. Director Wigand.
Here.
Director Whitaker?
Here.
Director Yeo?
Here.
Okay, you do have a quorum with eight directors present.
Okay. Do we have any items too late to be agendized?
We have nothing.
All right. This is the time for visitor participation. Do we have anyone who would like to speak? We'll listen. Anybody? Seen any hand? Yes, no one wants to speak tonight. Okay. Moving on to the consent calendar. Anybody wants to pull anything?
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
I'll second.
Have a motion and a second.
Roll call, Director Mezquia.
Yes.
Director Bilodeau.
Yes.
Director Green.
Yes.
Director Meeks.
Yes.
Director Sheldon.
Yes.
Director Wigand.
Yes.
Director Whitaker?
Aye.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
Okay, that motion carries with eight yes votes, with Directors Nguyen and Tran absent.
Okay, and moving on to an update on FURO at Prado Dam.
Yes, we have Dr. Marty Ralph here from the Scripps Institute, and he's going to give us an update on our FURO work and working with the Corps of Engineers to store more water behind Prado Dam. Lisa, you want to?
Yeah, I'll do a quick introduction. Madam President, Board, it is my pleasure to welcome Dr. Marty Ralph. He is the director for the Center of Western Weather and Water Extremes. He is a meteorologist focused on atmospheric rivers, understanding the origins of floods, and on improving predictions for water management and flood control applications. For 21 years at NOAA, he created the Center for Western Weather and Water Extremes at UC San Diego. He's published over 150 peer-reviewed scientific articles and has developed programs on new science and technology and their application to solving practical problems. He is a leading expert on atmospheric rivers and provides input to policymakers on Western weather and water extremes. He is a leader in development of forecast-informed reservoir operations, which we call FURO. He works closely with federal, state, and local water managers like us. He is a fellow of the American Meteorological Society and has received awards from several organizations. He has a BS in meteorology from the University of Arizona, which I know a lot of people here love, and a PhD in atmospheric sciences from UCLA. And his leadership is what got us through the final viability assessment. And he's here today to talk about the results of that and how to move us forward into implementation.
Thank you very much.
I bet you've been having a ball lately.
A lot going on, yeah. But I imagine you have as well. First, I just want to say it's a real honor to be here and so proud to be supporting Orange County Water District and the 2+ million people you serve. It's not lost on me every time I turn my tap on that there are talented agencies and people behind the scenes that most people don't get a chance to meet or see. I have the good fortune to have been able to work with a lot of leaders in water, and I don't take that for granted. And I think we've got the slide up here. So whenever we're set with that, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. Well, it's a very special moment for myself and for the team that I represent. It has been several years of hard work with colleagues, many colleagues here at OCWD, at other organizations in our center, in the Army Corps of Engineers and elsewhere, that we have some really good news to report that I'm sure you know about, but I'll get to that in a sec. All right. Let's see if I can get it to advance. Uh-oh. There we go. It's the space bar. So first, I just want to give you some context of where we're at, just a slide or two on where the FIRO program is, which we started here in California with Lake Mendocino up in Sonoma County and Grant Davis, general manager there. And very quickly, within a couple of years, it became evident there could be possible applications at other reservoirs. It was going pretty well. And Prado Dam in Orange County Water District is the second one. So I'm going to show you where we're at nationally on that. And I'll share a bit on the final viability assessment for Prado. We finished that process and next steps on implementation, and then a few highlights of the recent active weather we've had. So one of the things we do is we produce written reports that go through a peer review process. And here we see for the Russian River and Lake Mendocino, our preliminary viability assessment, which gave us sort of the positivity that led to Prado Dam coming online as a project. And then Lake Mendocino's final viability assessment finished in December 2021. And in Lake Mendocino, we really saw the promise of FIRO. And with Prado, we sort of tested the transferability of that success at Mendo. And we have completed now both the work plan and the preliminary viability assessment. And as of just a couple months ago, we completed the final viability assessment. And I'll give you the final numbers on that in just a moment. And we're well underway at two much larger reservoirs in the state, New Bullards Bar and Oroville Dam up north, really central to the California water supply, including our water down here. And that is not to the final viability stage yet, but it's very far along and looking encouraging. When it comes to the overall development of FIRO, we've realized there's a lot of interest and potential for this, and we've expanded our efforts across the state of California. You can see there on the right map down at the, in each case now, we have two reservoirs on the same river we're working on. And in the case of Santa Ana River, we've added Seven Oaks Dam to our process. And Lisa Haney is a member of our steering committee, and support from Adam Hutchinson, who's been a great partner on FIRO for some time. And then we've also started up in Seattle area. And that's a reservoir that, you know, they fill a lot and spill, but they still have some challenges, and salmon are a big part of what they'd like to do better on. Now we're launching, and we're in the first year now of our third 5-year phase, which is our National Expansion Pathfinder. I won't go into the details there, but the punchline is that what we have developed here at Prado Dam, at Mendocino, in California, now Washington State, we are exploring formally how that might work in many other places across the country. So we're going to take a quick sort of a weed out test for 700 reservoirs the Corps of Engineers operates, 700 facilities. About half of them we're going to probably rule out right away because it just doesn't even make sense. But the other half is still going to be hundreds of reservoirs. So once again, this highlights, I believe, the leadership of California in innovation in guiding what could really be a major transformation in water management flexibility across the country. We now have Mike Connor, the leader of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, you know, communicating in his circles of the importance of the Corps of Engineers moving forward on this, of trying to strive for more impact and drought resilience from it, more flexibility with the existing infrastructure. So I just met with Camille Tooten, the commissioner of the Bureau of Reclamation, a couple weeks ago in D.C. They're very interested in FIRO as well. So the floodgates are open, so to speak, on this topic moving forward. The effort here on Prado, as all of our Fear of Viability Assessment efforts are, a very collaborative approach. We bring experts together who operate water systems, both for water supply and flood management, and also with environmental aspects at the table and fully considered. We have engineers, we have scientists, we have managers and others, and we work very closely together. And this is a photo from right outside your door here of our celebratory moment there in November. We had a nice big cake. Adam's holding right there to celebrate, and Lisa's there, and of course, Mike, Marcus, and many others you probably recognize. So a really big milestone for us. And what did we find? The basic answer is that we found Firo is viable on Prado. Yay. That's years of effort, and it's rigorous, robust, confident result, and actually sort of conservative in the scope of what is recommended relative to what I think is possible. And you can see here, raising the maximum water level to 510 or 512 would yield about 4,000 to 6,000 acre feet of additional storage and recharge per year. That's enough for on the order of 20,000 people for a year. That's super motivating for someone in my position where I don't manage water, but our work is helping. Hopefully you guys do even better. And then in addition, there's a potential slight benefit in the flood control side as well through pre-releases and the like. So this is the fundamental finding. It's a viable to do Firo at Prado Dam. And part of the reason that's super important as we go forward is, as in this example, going back 30 plus years of the modeled annual Santa Ana River recharge, up to a factor of 6 variability from year to year. There's big swings in wet and dry here. And when you look at the national variability of annual precipitation nationally, Southern California, the Sierras, Southern Sierra is the bullseye of the most variable precipitation annually in the country by like a factor of 2 almost. I'm from Michigan originally. I've lived in Florida and Colorado, go to DC a lot. Every year can be so profoundly different here relative to what other regions have to handle. So having flexibility in reservoir operations brought on by Firo can help address that. The next step is really the vital one, because now that we've proven it out, we need to implement it. And when I say we, it's really an Army Corps of Engineers led effort to update the water control manual. Of course, there's the modifications to the dam that are underway. There's a series of water control manual updates, and we are now sort of sliding into a position in that process where we will bring Firo forward as a major element of a water control manual update. And one of the things our center is committed to doing in partnership with Orange County Water District is representing, with the science and the facts behind us, every potential opportunity for Firo to become fully implemented within that water control manual update. We work very well with the Corps of Engineers and with others, and our goal here is to be right at the table from day one in that process here on Prado Dam. And you can see a timeline here of various things. Some of the things I'll just highlight at the bottom, which we're poised to do here to continue our relationship with Orange County Water District, is to continue our role in the leadership team and the associated activities from that. We're going to keep the band together. That's sort of what it boils down to. We've created a great rapport, trust, and confidence in each other with our steering committee for Firo. We're going to keep going on that a little bit less frequently, but it'll be perfect. And fundamentally support Firo implementation. I've learned from my career in science and weather that it's not the same to hand the ball over to the other team and expect they're going to run the right play. And what we've learned is we've developed Firo as a research and operations partnership. So we're on the same team. We're handing off that ball in a big way, but we're also there running the play with them. And that's the spirit of our effort under implementation. Also, we have novel tools that we've developed through Firo and other means through the state support to provide information on incoming storms that has more detail, more accuracy than other sources have. And we're going to continue to provide support for Orange County Water District directly using those tools. In addition, we want to advance consideration of environmental situations or environmental factors. And this will be done from a watershed-wide perspective as well, in partnership with other agencies. And then fundamentally, we'll be coordinating with Seven Oaks Dam. There's a now FERO they're just getting started. We're completing the work plan there, which is setting the stage for a few years of serious evaluations. And Orange County Water District is right at the table there in the form of Lisa Haney and myself with the role I have in as a partner of Orange County Water District. And our full team at Scripps is fully behind us. All right, I'm going to shift gears now. That's the results of years of work, and we're moving forward. This is a little bit of a what happened over the last couple of weeks sort of summary from a nerdy meteorologist standpoint, and hopefully you'll find something interesting in there. So one of the first questions I often get is, was the storm that just hit and was serious an atmospheric river or not? So we have ways to evaluate that. And that diagram on the bottom left, the big red blob there hitting the coast with the vectors pushing, you know, the water vapor towards the coast, that's the signature of an AR in a map. And then the diagram on the right is a time series. The left half of that diagram is the last week. And the fact that there's that spike in the vertical there, that's the strength of the vapor transport, the strength of the AR. It reached what we call strong intensity. And it lasted long enough that it qualified as an AR3 on our scale. And the scale goes from 1 to 5. And AR5s don't happen really down here at all. AR4s are super rare. 3s can cause a lot. And a 1 or 2 on the heels of a big one right before can be super impactful as well. So this shows very clearly it was, in fact, an AR and an AR3 at that. How much rain fell is shown in this map from the California-Nevada River Forecast Center. And it shows the purple colors down there in the transverse ranges of the San Gabriels and San Bernardinos and the San Inez Mountains, et cetera. Many places up over 10 inches of rain in just a couple days. And the maximum amount was up over 12 inches. And it turns out if you consider how much that is relative to a normal year, the whole year, on the right, the blue colors and bluish green represent what I've circled there is essentially in 3 days, we got the equivalent of what we would get, half of what we would get in an entire year, an average year. You can imagine if we get one of those 1 year, but we don't get it the next, that contributes to that huge range from year to year in precipitation. So individual storms and events like this really make or break the water year for much of California. And they are atmospheric river driven. This is another way to look at it. It's showing the percent of normal water year to date precipitation prior to the storm on the left, which was about, you know, 70, it was a little bit below normal, not bad below normal, but below. But then look what happened just a few days later when we calculate that. We're over 150% of normal for the date, you know, after that 3 days of very wet rain. It's not very surprising, but these are very quantitative analyses. And notice that green swath moving up to the northeast. That if we go back to this, you can see how that stretches all the way even into Death Valley and into the deserts and into Nevada. That's how these ARs work. They penetrate inland. And I'm not going to show anything in my talk here about it, but I want to make mention that, you know, as a Southern Californian myself, I know that some of my water comes from Colorado River, and that water comes from snowmelt primarily. And it turns out 40% of the snowpack in the upper Colorado River comes from atmospheric river storms like this one, penetrating inland to the high country of the Rockies, the west slope of the Rockies, dumping copious snow. I'm also a skier, and I happen to know that when it's an AR, it's often a warm storm, and it's more like Sierra cement than it is champagne powder. But I'll live with the Sierra cement because it brings us good water, and then the end of the storm will be nice, light, and powdery. All right. There's that and that. And here's what just happened the last couple of days. It's been an epic winter already. These are 3 day storm totals up through yesterday or through this morning. And it's a telling thing. I was up at 6 a.m. watching this, that over 8 inches of rain up in the Santa Barbara, Ventura area, even the Malibu area. But just down here, we just got 2 to 4 inches. That's a huge difference, obviously, for all sorts of water management reasons. And it's just 100 miles apart. This is the driving challenge for our research, for our innovative tools, is to try to get that right. And that's a pretty hard thing to do. But one of the first things we got to do to get that right is get the atmospheric river right. If it's like hits Santa Barbara and stalls there instead of coming through LA, you're going to get something like this. If it does the opposite, it sort of races through Santa Barbara and stalls in LA, you're going to have the opposite pattern. And we do a lot in our center to advance predictions of that. And one of them is to use aircraft offshore that we fly and operate through our center. They're national assets from the U.S. Air Force Weather Reconnaissance and from NOAA Aircraft Operations Center. And here's a picture of the storm from Sunday afternoon offshore. You can see the signature, the orange colors and all of the AR characteristic of it. And that purple dotted line is the track of the aircraft that when it was making measurements with these drop zones in the storm. And where we flew across that is where we thought some of the biggest uncertainty was in the model, that in errors in the AR in those positions would add to error, create error in the forecast. And we've proven now repeatedly that these data make a difference in improving the forecast skill. And here's an iconic example of how it looks in water vapor. The orange thing on the left, that's the water vapor transport. That's like the flow of the river. And what's on the right is the amount of water vapor irrespective of the wind. The color fill is the water vapor content. And look at that long, narrow thing. It even looks like a river. Of course, it's blue because we chose to color it blue. And you can see some vectors along there. So this is really an iconic example of an AR that hit the region. And it did qualify, I think, as an AR2 in the end. One of the interesting things this year is we have, of course, an El Nino going, where the temperature in the ocean, the surface temperatures over the tropical Pacific are extra warm in ways that impact the storm track and other things. A lesser known factor of El Nino is that the ocean right offshore from here, not just way down in the tropics, but right offshore from here, is also warm. And these two AR storms on the left, the top one was from San Diego a couple of weeks ago. We had a terrible urban flooding problem, a lot of storm water damage. And it was an AR1 down there. And the question is, how does that warm water offshore affect things? And here's what that warm water looks like. You can see Baja in the bottom right. You can see the coast of California. The San Francisco Bay, you know, sticks out a little bit there or is noticeable. And those red and orange and yellow areas are well above normal ocean surface temperatures. And what happens when wind blows across that, it can gain heat from the ocean, literally like on your stove kind of heat, but it also has more evaporation of water vapor into it. And those two things modify the nature of the storm. It sort of amps up the atmospheric river characteristics, and it literally makes the precipitation heavier. And this is from the day that the storm hit San Diego, and the ocean temperatures were 2 to 4 degrees Fahrenheit warmer than normal in an area that the atmospheric river went right across. So it went right across that, soaked up more water vapor, gained more heat, and that put more energy into the air that when it hit the land and hit the mountains, it could go up faster and dump heavier rain. And I led a program some 20 years ago where we calculated this from very special measurements and modeling, that this is a very real thing that happens in El Niños here. It's not the type of thing you hear about most often, but this warm temperatures offshore really add to the impacts of heavy rain, wind, flooding, and landslides ultimately.
Marty, when you say that the water temperature is higher, how warm is it?
About 2 to 4 degrees warmer than normal. So it's like closer to 60 Fahrenheit instead of closer to 55. I don't actually know the actual temperatures out there, so I'm just estimating.
I just wanted to.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But that's that 2 to 4 Fahrenheit has a massive amount of energy for the atmosphere to have available relative to what it would otherwise have. So these are what our science does. Scripps Institution of Oceanography is a deeply knowledgeable group of people around ocean behavior. And we have, obviously, the oceans are what provide the water vapor that atmospheric rivers then channel into our rain and snow. Where do we stand for the year? This is for the LA Basin area, which is inclusive of Orange County. And what we see in the horizontal axis is from the 1st of October to the end of April. The vertical axis is the percent of normal annual total precipitation. And that dark blue strip in the middle, that's the middle two-thirds of all the years. And the blue dotted line is the average. And the light blue wings of this are the upper one-sixth of the years and the lower one-sixth of the years. So what we see here, if you look back to around the 1st of February, we were below normal, even though it's an El Nino year and all that. But in a matter of a few days, we jumped right up to the top one-sixth. And the most recent storm has now kept us at that level. How does this compare to other El Nino years? Is on the right-hand diagram. And each of those lines, is colored lines, is from a previous El Nino. Four of the five were really wet here in the LA Basin. And as of the 1st of February, it was looking like we were on track to be a dry year like 2015-16, despite being El Nino. And then you can just see how profoundly that changed in a matter of a few days. This points to a really interesting thing in the science of El Nino, La Nina, and our rainfall in Southern California. We have now done a study that shows that in the last decade, in San Diego County especially, the three wettest years were all La Ninas, which we would think should be wet years. And the two El Nino years were drier than normal. And what was the common denominator? The two dry El Ninos had a lack of ARs, and the three wet La Ninas had a surplus of ARs. So ARs are actually sort of the disruptor of the correlation between El Nino, La Nina, and wet or dry in Southern California. We haven't published it quite yet, but it's in prep to go forward. A nice postdoc working on it. And you can see here how it played out this year so far. Now we could see, you know, if we see additional storms, we'll climb up that ladder even further. Speaking of that, let's look out 10 days. I don't have a bunch of forecast stuff in here, pretty much just this slide. This is a tool that we've developed at the center. The map on the left there, the color fill is the amount of precipitation in inches predicted over the next 10 days. And this is from the U.S. model, what's called the GFS, Global Forecast System. And the purples and pinks, those are super wet. The orangish and yellowish, there's some rain, but not a ton. And you can see the blue dot down there is our Santa Ana River watershed. And let's take a look at what the precipitation looks like there. This is now on the upper panel on the right, the time series over the next 10 days of cumulative precipitation across the watershed on average. And what you see here is a few days out, we have another storm. It's not, if you look at the vertical axis, it's a couple inches. So at this point, it doesn't look anything close to what we just had the last couple of the ones that went through, but it could be an additional storm. And that far out, as a weather person, we know to, you know, keep our eyes open for a change in the forecast. And the difference between the bold blue line and bold red line in the bottom is the difference between the European model, which is the most accurate global model, and the U.S. model, the blue one. And you can see the U.S. model is saying about twice as much precip in that storm as the European model has. And we see those flip-flops sometimes. And it's one of the things we're studying is why are they different? And we have our own specialized model we're trying to do even better. And what does it look like offshore at one point? It looks like an AR. And so one of the reasons there's a difference in between these two models is that they handle that AR differently. And look at the edge of the AR, the northeast edge is just barely scraping up against the coast here. If one of the models has it coming a bit more onshore into this region where we live here or where we are here, then there's going to be heavier rain, which is what the GFS model is saying is going to happen. The European model is keeping it offshore just a little bit. So we're now able to really see the causes of some of these errors. And one of the things we do most to improve on these is run these aircraft flights. This is a map that's got a lot of information on it, but the right-hand side, of course, is the aircraft from the Air Force in the upper right and NOAA in the lower right. But each of those colorful tracks over the ocean is a different flight, and each dot is a different drop zone that we release from the airplane. We've now done, this was as of a few days ago, we had done 34 intensive observing periods, or IOPs. That's a day where we fly one, two, or three airplanes simultaneous. We've done 34 of those. The most we'd ever done before was 29. We have a ton of support legislatively, and scientifically and agency-wise to do more of this. And our goal is to have 60 of these between November 1st and March 31st. That's our full program. That's being considered at the highest levels as our target right now. And notice on the bottom left, you see Guam out there. For the first time ever, we flew missions out of Guam with the U.S. Air Force. Because the weather largely goes from west to east, by going farther west, we gain more lead time in terms of seeing these storms coming and helping them be more accurate. And with that, I will close and say extra slide. No. Thank you very much.
Any questions or comments?
Director Wigand has his hand
raised. Director Wigand has a question for you.
Yeah, just curious. So the flights originating out of California seem to be coming from the Bay Area, or is that correct? Is that the best for NOAA to send the flights out of?
It's close to the Bay Area. It's Sacramento. And we have experimented with operating out of different bases over the last several years as we've developed the program. And this one gives us the most access to far enough north if the storm track is going into the northwest U.S. and far enough south if it's coming into Southern California. Also, the facilities themselves are very very well suited to our needs. And then out of Hawaii, we have the NOAA aircraft has been operating out of Hawaii.
Cool. Okay, thanks.
Sure.
Vice President Bilodeau? Oh.
Good evening, Dr. Ralph. So in terms of Prado Dam, has the Army Corps embraced this data, and are they changing any of their operations currently as a result?
Yes. In fact, the recent storms, I've understood informally that they have been using the tools that we developed, and they incorporated them into decision-making along the way, which I understand gave good consideration to OCWD's recharge needs. And they moderated their releases in order to allow for longer, you know, recharge opportunities.
Do you think that's going to be formalized at some point? Is there some kind of process we're going to go through?
Yes, that's what we refer to as the water control manual update. Sure. So the actual formal control manual is slated to be updated, and that's what we're going to be contributing to.
Okay, thank you.
Sure thing.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you for a fabulous report. Very
thank
interesting.
You.
Madam President, I had a question. If I just put my hand up. I apologize. You didn't see it. Yeah. If I may. Hi, Doctor. Could you go into some more detail as to the tools that the Corps used and how that works in your inner relationship and the given the back and forth with your group and the Corps, and exactly what tools and how they do and how did that exactly work?
Yeah, I'll mention three items. First of all, we know that it's ARs that make floods here. So the first question is the incoming storm an atmospheric river or not? And our tools are designed specifically to diagnose that and display it, as I showed some examples here. So that's one of the primary things.
What are those tools?
Well, an example was this display right here in the bottom left. You see the color, you know, the orange and yellow colored thing. That's one of the diagrams we've developed to show that it's an AR. And we have many other ways of looking at the AR. So that's an example. Another is we have it's called a decision support tool, the Ensemble Forecast Operations Tool, and it takes the 63 forecasted stream flows or inflows into Prado Dam from the National Weather Service and calculates the odds of that getting of those inflows being big enough to create some problems. And if there's a risk of some kind of a problem, then releases are recommended at a certain rate to ensure that those problems don't occur. It's called an Ensemble Forecast Operations Decision Support Tool. And that has been something we've trained the Corps on, and they've been utilizing our products in this recent event. And then third is we have developed a tailored weather prediction model, regional, tailored to the atmospheric river forecast problem. and the California and West Coast precipitation, extreme precipitation. It is the most accurate model for predicting ARs. And we produce, I could give all sorts of details on how that works and why and what the products are. But those are really remarkably new and informative things. And we also have some artificial intelligence tools that we're running on top of that. So those are the examples that I have on the top of my head.
So, and thank you for that. And I'm just trying to, you know, peel back so I understand the specifics. So the tools, did they purchase the software from your group? And are there some other vendor that provides that? Is that how they did it or some other way?
We are providing the Ensemble Forecast Operations output as part of our broader program efforts. And we have, in terms of the products that we're producing about atmospheric rivers in particular, we have the healthy support from the state of California through what's called the Atmospheric River Program. And then in terms of the water control manual update, we anticipate to be able to partner with the core LA district like we are with the San Francisco district for Lake Mendocino.
Okay, so in the, I think, previous presentations, you'd shown us how you have the jets that fly and you're able to test the density of the ARs and based upon that, all that information you send back to the product. Are you at that level yet? Is that what they're, is that part of what they're getting?
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. I should have mentioned that in early response to your question, is that the data I'm showing here, these are the aircraft data from the program we've developed and that we co-lead with the National Weather Service to make the forecast better. This is an operational program mandated through the committees that oversee U.S. Weather Reconnaissance Program in the summer and winter. In the summer, it's, you know, a hurricane thing. In the winter, it's our AR stuff. And these are operationally provided in real time. Those, each dot is the little sensor being released, and it radios back to the airplane the temperature, pressure, wind, and moisture. On the plane, a person quality controls those data, and then it's transmitted by satellite communications back to the ground to the big data bucket for weather data that the whole world's weather models use to initialize the next forecast. So these are an operational program that's benefiting the prediction of West Coast ARs.
I'm just kind of asking questions because we have some new members that may have not had the privilege of this information. So that's kind of why I'm going. I found this information fascinating. We have Gulfstream jets flying out in the Pacific Ocean during these storm events, getting this data.
That's right.
How many do you deploy and out of what airports and how often? And it's fascinating.
So we have been deploying. We've had as many as three or four Air Force C-130s on the ground in Sacramento from early January through February. And if they happen to be available and we need them in early December, we have been able to get them in December, and hopefully we can get some in March if we need. And the G4 came out the 1st of December this year to Hawaii, and it just went back a couple weeks ago because there were so many flights. We used up the resource because it's been very active. So one G4 and then up 2 to 4 C-130s on the ground in Sacramento.
Well, next time that G4 leaves from San Diego to Hawaii, I'll be happy to carry your bags. If
you let them, you. We have a waiting list, yes.
So when,
no, I appreciate the interest. And we do try to take interested parties on board. I went this year with a reporter from the environmental lead reporter for CBS National News and his producer and camera person. And they did a very nice segment on us and the work we do at the national with national visibility.
Final question to the delight of my colleagues on the board. What is like the budget you foresee for the next few years and then moving forward from an operational point of view for Pato Dam?
I couldn't quite hear the first part of that.
The budget that you foresee for the next 3 years from the district and then the operational budget after then going forward to be able to participate in this.
Yeah, it's on the order of $350 a year for the next 3 years to provide the do the tasks that I outlined earlier. And that'll be our goal, to try to ensure that FERO is incorporated fully into the water control manual update. And beyond that, we don't have a estimate per se on operational costs, but we are working hard with NOAA to develop various, like in the case of this AR recon, this is an operational thing now, doesn't cost anything for Orange County Water District. And we're looking at that same sort of thing with our model effort as well, to have a really state-of-the-art, you know, atmospheric river prediction model as part of it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? Thank you very much for an excellent report.
Thank you.
Okay, next, moving on to water resources.
That information is in the packet.
Okay. Director Whitaker, do you have a SOPA report?
I do. It's brief. Among the items that we dealt with at yesterday morning's SOPA commission meeting was an informational item involving an update on our Santa Ana River Watershed Weather Modification Pilot Program. And we're new into our trial period this year, but we've already had some very robust rainfall. And so the ground-based cloud seeding effort has been activated fairly sparingly. The volumes of water that we've been receiving precipitation have caused us to be a little cautious. And we've received at SOPA inquiries from media and other sources who have concerns about perhaps the cloud seeding being too successful and contributing to flood conditions or other forms of damage. So the commissioners did discuss among ourselves efforts to reach out to communicate fully and to explain to the public they don't really understand what we're doing so much with the cloud seeding. And we're going to up our efforts and use the media to our advantage. That was primarily, that was the gist of our meeting. That's all, Madam President. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Okay, moving on to committee conference meeting reports. Tom Ledge, Chair Bilodeau.
Yes, the meeting minutes are contained in the packet. Thank you.
Water issues, Chair Whitaker.
Details are contained within the packet.
Okay. Admin Finance, Chair Yeo.
Yes, I believe the information is contained within the packet.
Okay, do we have any reports on committees or conference or meetings attended at district expense? Don't see anything. Okay, moving on to verbal reports. I don't have a president's report. General Manager?
Just two quick items. Just a summary of what has happened with Prado Dam over the last few days. Water behind the dam peaked at 27,000 acre feet, which is at elevation 508. And right now the Corps is releasing 5,000 CFS to get down to elevation 505. And then once they're down at 505, then they'll greatly cut back the releases and they'll release water at a rate that's easier for us to capture. So we'll see a lot of water going down the river for at least another 24 hours, and then we'll probably be at 505. So that's good news. The second thing I wanted to announce is Chris Olson was promoted today to my old position as director of executive director of engineering and water resources.
Congratulations.
We had an internal and external recruitment process, and Chris clearly came out to be the number one candidate. So looking forward to working with him.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Okay. Moving on, director's reports. Any directors? No? Okay. General counsel? All right. We're adjourned.